Argument, 188 LLC versus Trinity Industries, Mr. Ryan.
Good morning. May I please report? The principal question before this court on appeal results from the district court's grant of a 12B6 motion dismissing count one of the second amended complaint here. And that ruling was based entirely on the content of a document entitled, quote, Trinity Railcar Repair General Terms and Conditions Form 4, end quote. And that document was neither referred to nor incorporated by reference into count one of the second amended complaint. Now, it's clear from the record that Form 4 provided the entire basis for Judge Conlon's dismissal of count one. As she concluded and summed up, quote, Form 4 is enforceable and binding on 188. Now, as indicated, our principal contention is that Form 4 was not properly before Judge Conlon. In order to defend Judge Conlon's ruling, Trinity points to a line of cases for the proposition that, and I quote from page 9 of Trinity's brief, documents the defendant attaches to a motion to dismiss are considered part of the pleadings if they are referred to in the plaintiff's complaint and are central to the plaintiff's claim.
But I think the problem is looking at the contract. This is, AE 20? Your opponent's appendix, page 20, is the contract? Maybe you don't have the appendix.
It's
the white appendix.
Yeah, it's yes, Your Honor.
Is that it? It's January 10th?
Yeah, it's two letters. It's the January 10 letter and then the February 15, 1999 letter, and I think everyone agrees that that really means February 15, 2000.
Where's that?
That's in front of
That's in front?
I think I'm looking at a different
That's just
exhibit.
The one
that's
page.
Exhibit A to the Second Amendment complaint. That's the
A19, yeah.
Correct. And then the letter to which it responded, Trinity's letter, dated January 10, 2000.
Okay, so this is your response. A19 is your response to A20.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the issue obviously arises out of the phrase at the bottom of AE20, which says sales of all services and materials are subject to the general terms and conditions on the reverse side. And what Trinity has what they put before Judge Conlon was a document entitled Form 4, Trinity Railcar Repair General Terms and Conditions Form 4. Now, the complaint alleges, and again, we've got a 12B6 motion here, the complaint alleges that there was nothing on the reverse side of the documents that were submitted, this three-page document that was submitted to 188. That's the state of the record on the complaint that was before Judge Conlon. The question is, how does she get Form 4 in front of her to rely on to dismiss the complaint? It was submitted by Trinity.
Well, I don't really understand your client's conduct. It says sales of all services and materials are subject to the general terms and conditions on the reverse side. You're saying the reverse side was blank. So what does that mean? There are no terms and conditions? That'd be kind of weird. This is not a trivial amount of money involved.
Well, Your Honor, the complaint alleges, count one of the complaint that's in front of the court alleges that there was nothing on the reverse side.
I know there was nothing, but what did you think? What did your client think when he reads sales of all service materials subject to general terms and conditions on the reverse side, and there's nothing on the reverse side?
Well,
what does he think? There are no terms and conditions?
I don't know what he thinks, but I think the question...
Well, it's kind of goofy, isn't it? I don't understand it. It's obvious from reading that if there isn't anything on the reverse side, there's something wrong.
Well, let's assume that he either didn't ask or did ask or didn't get any answer. The complaint alleges that he was not aware of any such document. The question is, how do we get from that, whatever extent the client could or should have inquired about it, to the document that has been put into the record here without any sworn testimony, without any foundation. It's not referred to in count one. The only basis for having it, and it may turn out, Your Honor, that when this claim goes to issue, that there will be evidence that will convince a finder of fact that 188 should have inquired or did inquire, or if it had inquired, it would have gotten to Form 4. There's nothing in the record as we stand here today that even suggests that such an inquiry would have led to Form 4. Is there a Form 3 or a Form 2? Trinity hasn't presented any document to Judge Conlon or to anyone else that there was anything on the back of anything. All we have is this random piece of paper produced originally in response to an initial 12B6 motion. It came from Trinity and was considered by the court. And our position at this point is, whatever that piece of paper said, something more is necessary.
Well, now she represents your complaint as saying that 188 argued Trinity agreed to exclude, that's you, 188 argued Trinity agreed to exclude Form 4.
That's not the allegation in the second amended complaint. That was an allegation in an earlier complaint.
Yeah.
That's been superseded.
What do you mean superseded? It's not true?
Well, it is not true. What she says is true. That is a quote from an earlier complaint. That allegation does not reflect the accurate state of the record, which is contained in the second amended complaint.
So that, in fact, you were correcting a Scrivener's error.
That the original complaint.
That's a kind way of putting it.
Yeah, the original complaint was composed by a different counsel who chose, I suggest, to characterize what happened in a way that I think was a legal conclusion and really didn't accurately reflect the record. The accurate record is contained in count one of the second amended complaint. That is, no general terms and conditions, Form 4, Form 3, Form 7, Form 8, nothing was ever transmitted to 188 and became part of this contract. But more importantly, on a motion to dismiss, no such form, no such document coming solely from the defendant could form the basis for her granting that 12B6 motion. I think the cases are quite clear that if she was going to consider that document, the 12B6 motion had to be converted into a Rule 56 motion. And that was not done. That would have given us a chance to test its evidentiary sufficiency. And that's the... that's the reason that 12B6 grant should be reversed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Mr. Gantz?
Good day. May it please the court, my name is William Gantz, and I represent the Appalee Trinity Industries. 188 LLC, the appellant in this case, is not the first party that has tried to get around and expressly referred to general terms and conditions that's referred to in a contract. The issues presented by them are hardly novel. The facts here are not novel
facts. But how do we know that Form 4 is what was or should have been on the back?
Well, Your Honor,
they never saw Form 4.
Right. Well, I don't believe that in any of the pleadings or arguments in the district court that 188 ever challenged that indeed the general terms and conditions, which Trinity was referring to, were not genuine or were not the right document. There's no allegation of that. And even in their proposed count two, where they said they wanted to make certain arguments why it shouldn't apply to bar their claims, they didn't say it wasn't the correct document. indeed, they had in fact attached the document themselves to the first amended complaint, and they're bound by some of the allegations in this case. They are part of the record, and they did allege.
They attached Form 4 to the second?
They attached it to the first, Your Honor, and they attached it to the second, and they never disavowed. There was no issue. I guess the easiest way to say is that whether or not that was the genuine document which was referred to in the contract which they signed. They've made some argument that there's difference of words in their appeal.
Is there just one amended complaint?
There was two amended complaints. The case that brings us here is the final dismissal.
Where is the second amended complaint?
The second...
Oh, here it is. At 52, is that A52?
I believe you're right, Your Honor.
And you're saying this had attached to it Form 4?
Yes, it did, Your Honor. In reference, you may recall that 188 is making the argument that this court, because count 2 was not allowed by the judge, that this court should divorce the possibility of considering their attachment, that this court should consider count 1 in a vacuum. They did attach it to this complaint, so...
But you had attached to the complaint, to your motion to dismiss originally.
In our initial motion to dismiss, we attached it.
The plaintiff talks about purported general terms. I don't think it's acknowledging that these are the terms.
Okay, well, there was never an argument and there was never an allegation that the document which they attached and all the parties relied upon in making the arguments was not genuine. The issue is whether or not they should be bound by it.
Well, quite, no, there's still an argument there is such a document, but they said it wasn't attached to theirs, and so that they're not bound by it at all.
Right, they're making a procedural argument that 188, that Judge Conlon should not have considered the terms and conditions.
Well, what they said, there's a question of fact as to whether or not that was the document they had to be bound by. And
well,
that she just assumed that because they had... It was there that there was no other document which we had referenced, and so that had to be the one that they're stuck with. They said that's quite the fact.
Well, they never disputed in the record below that that was the case, that they needed to present fact that that was not the document. They never asked to present an affidavit. There simply was never a question raised by 188 of whether or not that was a genuine document.
Well, we're back. Genuine has absolutely nothing to do with it.
That was the actual document.
It's the document that is... They're bound by is the question issue bit fact.
Correct. Their argument was not that that what we've attached isn't the right document.
No, or isn't a document that you have prepared, that you have used in other things, but whether or not it affects them is the question of fact.
That's correct. They argued that they should not be bound simply because it was not attached to the contract.
Right, that's right.
That was the only argument.
So what's wrong with that argument?
Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with that argument, Your Honor?
Why are they bound to something they never saw?
Well, this raises the question that's been discussed many times, where you have a sophisticated business party which is expressly referred to general terms and conditions in the contract that they sign, thereby incorporating by reference other documents which are not actually in front of them.
But it says the general terms and conditions on the reverse. It doesn't say, you know, go look in our files or something. And if there's nothing on the reverse, then what exactly has Trinity agreed to?
Well, this has been addressed by the Rosinski case, the JAM process case.
Well, what's the case that's closest?
I think the case that's actually the closest is the Andrin case or the Rosinski case. They're pretty
well,
much...
Which? Yeah, well, and they say that if there's a reference to a document that is not there,
that's correct.
You're still stuck with it.
Yes, and the reason...
If there's only one. You've referred to it, I think, as 4?
Yes. They refer to it as Form 4.
What did you refer to
it as? Well, the document itself says that it's the general terms and conditions for rail car repair.
It also
form
says
4.
Form 4, yes.
It says Form 4.
Right.
Okay, so they refer to it as Form 4 because you referred to it as Form 4. Is there a Form 1?
Not an issue in this case, Your Honor. No.
Well, how do we know? If you haven't attached it, and you say, but that refers to 4-4, and if there is a 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, why isn't it just as logical to think that that's the one they have to be bound by?
Well, I think you're raising a good point. Unfortunately, it was one that was never raised by 188 in the court below. So there was never any.
They said they weren't bound by these conditions because they didn't see it. Now, how else would they raise it?
Well, they didn't. They used this document and said this document does not bar our claims because it was not attached. They never suggested that there was any different document.
Well, since you were the one that raised the document yourself, this is a document you're relying on. What else would they say? It may be there, but why is it? Why are we stuck with it? We never saw it before.
Well, they didn't allege that in their first amendment.
They didn't acknowledge that it was Form 4 that should have been on the back.
They have not admitted that, but they also haven't said it wasn't the document.
But they don't have. I don't understand. Why do they have to? It's just at the pleading stage. They don't have to. It's not as if you'd, attach an affidavit to your motion to dismiss and say, all our contracts to repair rail cars have Form 4 on the back. You didn't do that. Did you?
No, we didn't, Your Honor.
So we don't know. I mean, as Judge Bauer said, maybe Form 1 was on the back of this.
Well, and this is a situation that always happens when one party that has a duty to investigate based upon the language in a clear incorporation by reference in their contract doesn't do so.
Well, how about somebody who says there's something in the back and doesn't put anything in the back? Why isn't there a position that was taken by Judge Posner in the beginning, seeing no conditions in the back when you assume there were no conditions?
Well, there's case law on this, and the reason in Rosinski and JAM process and Andrin and Ridge.
As a matter of sure common sense, if I say this is subject to what's on the back, and there's nothing on the back, then I'm not stuck with anything, am I? Just as a matter of common sense, never mind a case, just think it over.
If you're present and the party handing you the document is present, like in the Landmark case, yes. Otherwise, no.
You mean I mail you a document, I've signed it, it's subject to the conditions on the back, and there's nothing on the back. I now have to assume that there is something on the back I have to look for.
That's correct, Your Honor. Particularly where a specific document is.
But it isn't specific. It wasn't specific.
Well, the language in the.
It says that what's referred to on the back. It doesn't say number 4 or number 7 or number 10 or anything. It just says what's on the back.
Well, it refers to general terms and conditions, and that's precisely the document that's at issue.
But you have, my point in the beginning, if you were listening carefully, was that what you're referring to is a numbered document. And I asked whether there are any other documents with numbers that might be attached. And you said that wasn't pertinent to this inquiry. And my question is, it might very well be pertinent if they had a chance to find out if there were such documents.
And, Your Honor, that's why I responded by advising this court that in the district court they never controverted or asked for discovery or asked to submit an affidavit or turn this into an evidentiary hearing.
Why did they ask for discovery? I don't understand you.
Well, they made the argument on this appeal
we're not bound by this, they said.
Well, they're saying, the argument they're making on appeal is that the lower court, the district court, should not have treated this as a motion to dismiss. They should have heard evidence in which they could have denied or affirmed.
Well, I think you filed your motion to dismiss prematurely because you didn't. What you should have done, or maybe you should have attached to it an affidavit which said that, in fact, they knew, everyone knew, that Form 4 were the general terms and conditions. We have no idea whether it's true or not.
Well,
they haven't admitted it.
But they didn't raise that in defense to our motion.
Defense to your motion? I don't know. What? Your motion had no status as fact.
Well, the argument that they're making that we cannot. This is a standard situation where someone alleges a provision of a contract or they leave it out from their complaint. We added it and said this was the contract that they are alleging.
But you missed the point. When they filed a complaint, they said there was nothing on the back.
Now, when they filed the complaint, they didn't refer. This issue didn't come up in the original
because
complaint.
Because it wasn't on the back of the complaint of the contract.
Now, they didn't attach it or even bring up the issue in the first complaint, Your Honor. When they filed a First Amendment complaint, they attached it and said that we had agreed to specifically exclude those provisions. So they never raised an issue about whether or not that was a genuine document. And when that was dismissed, then they changed their story. And in the Second Amendment complaint, they said that they had never received it. So before there was an agreement to specifically exclude those documents, and in the Second Amendment complaint, they said that they had never received it. And a good example of why our motion was appropriate, If I could just wrap up, Your Honor, is in the Venture case, which is cited, a party is allowed to put on the contract where the documents are referred to in the complaint, and that's precisely what we did here. They do allege the contract, they used it, and we refer to the provisions of the contract.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gans. Mr. Ryan, how much time do you have?
I have nothing.
Okay. Thank you very much to both
counsel,
and the court will be in recess until